Mall in Philadelphia.
I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Radio Times. It looks like four unions instead of the usual six will take down the exhibits of the biotech conference that ends its three-day event at the Pennsylvania Convention Center in Philadelphia today. That's because the Metropolitan Regional Council of Carpenters Local 8 and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters Local 107 did not sign a customer satisfaction agreement by the May 5th deadline. At issue, changes in the work rules that the center leadership says has been hurting the center's reputation and its ability to book conferences. There was a protest on Monday outside the convention center where some members of the four unions that did sign the agreement, including IBEW head John Dougherty, crossed a union picket line. That doesn't happen very often here in Philadelphia. We begin our conversation with John McNichol, and he's the president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Convention Center Authority. And John McNichol, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty, and good morning.
Good morning. Did this all boil down to stepladders and power tools?
No, it's much deeper than that, Marty. Obviously, it's a fairly complicated structure that we have here at the center and how we deliver our show services to customers. So it went much deeper than that. I think you probably remember reading, if you do, about 10 years ago we had in 2003 a customer satisfaction agreement that had come to term. And so we were renegotiating that agreement and trying to correct the things at the center that we needed to be competitive in the industry.
And are you saying that Philadelphia, looking at the other convention centers across the country, was losing out because of some of these work rules?
Well, clearly. I mean, that message came to us very clearly, directly from customers who had been through the building, had less than satisfactory experiences, and overwhelmingly they pointed to what were really antiquated work rules, and another term is exhibitor rights, and those are the things that exhibitors can do once their booths are set up, what they can do inside their booths to sort of de-hassle the experience, control some cost, and just provide a better show for them.
And hassle seemed to be a word that you were hearing from some of the conventioneers.
Yeah, it's not so much about cost. I mean, it's about labor rates, of course, and it's about work rules and other things, but it's really, at the end of the day, about hassle. These customers come to the building, they spend a lot of money, and they invest a lot in our regional economy in the form of hotel room nights and restaurant visits and extended stays and visits to some of our arts and culture around the city and things that they spend here when they're here. So the last thing they need to be dealing with are hassles when they're spending all that money in the convention center to be here, to bring their business here. The last thing they want to do is have unclear or poorly defined rules, and so there's no real predictability for them about what's it going to cost me to be there, how's the workflow going to go, and how am I going to be able to serve my customers while I'm in Philadelphia. That's what we were attacking.
And this May 5th deadline for the unions to sign this customer agreement, was that totally in stone? Is there any wiggle room there?
No, it was in stone, and it was in stone for a very important reason. So as the negotiations broke down, specifically on the issues that we weren't able to resolve with the carpenters, I went over personally with counsel, and I stood before the six unions asking for an extension to continue negotiations, at which time we took a small break from that session, and while on break, the carpenters set up a picket line. Now, they have a right to do that, and I'm not arguing that point, but I will tell you that materially changed the offering that we then were able to provide to the remaining unions, including the carpenters. The problem is the industry has a perception of Philadelphia as being a tough place to do business. A lot of it is around labor work rules, but a lot of it also is about the administration of the building. Now, those are things that we've also tackled, and we've brought in a private operator to do a lot of these things, to right the ship, get our house in order before we went to the unions to ask for these sorts of work rule changes and exhibitor rights expansion that we thought were necessary. So, to be clear, once the strike took place, the second strike in less than a year, we really had to react in a very clear way so that the industry would see that the board of directors and the center was committed to making Philadelphia a better place to do business.
So that strike was a turning point for the center?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, among other things, but the turning point for the center, if we're being honest, was back a few years ago as we, you know, the taxpayers invested $780 million to expand the facility. And at that point in time, you know, these are big ships to turn. So we started to look, the board, that is, started to look very seriously about how we become more competitive, how do we change the perception of Philadelphia. So this was only one step in a you know, very strategic program to make the center more competitive.
Let me read something that we got from General Vice President Stephen Sweeney, the Iron Workers District Council of Philadelphia and Vicinity, saying, as one of the signatories to the customer service agreement, we are troubled by the Pennsylvania Convention Center Board's ongoing refusal to accept the signed customer service agreements that the Carpenters and Teamsters unions hand-delivered to the PCC Executive Director John McNichol last Friday. That's to you. He's troubled that yes, it might have been late, but you didn't sign on to it.
Right. So it was made very clear to all six unions that the deadline was a real deadline. We had correspondence in between the time that we had made the offer of the deal. And so we further clarified that the deadline was a real deadline. And we also notified all six unions that any unions that did not sign on to the deal by midnight on the 5th, would be on the outside, and the remaining unions, the signatory unions, would be able to then work with our management team to realign the work. So it was abundantly clear.
The Carpenters and Teamsters have filed unfair labor practices charges against the center. Do you have a response to that?
Well, I don't think it would be fair or in the best interest of any parties to litigate this in the media. I will say that, you know, we believe we have acted responsibly in good faith throughout the process, and, you know, we anticipate that we'll prevail there.
Have you heard from people like Bob Brady in the last week or two or three during these negotiations?
No, I know Congressman Brady has a keen interest in, you know, preserving what has been a very strong and long history of strong union presence in Philadelphia. I respect him for that position. I know that you know, and I will go back to say this, that I agree with Congressman Brady that it would have been a great thing to have all six unions standing side by side behind this agreement. That's how we structured it. That's how we offered it to all six unions, not once but twice in recent history, to give them the opportunity to be real partners moving forward in this process. And I just, out of respect for their leadership, I would not comment on why they made the decision that they did. But it was their decision not to join this agreement.
And the agreement includes 3% raises per year for a decade. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So it was what I thought to be a very reasonable financial package. Some would argue a very lucrative package for the unions. That same deal was available to all parties. And that was in exchange for the fact that we understood as a management team here that we were asking the unions to sort of change the way that we do business. I will tell you, you know, evidence in that fact that the unions that did sign on to the deal have even gone further than the deal and outside the agreement, and they've pledged to do something that's never been done before. They're going to go with us on the road, and they're going to stand with us with customers and explain to them how it's a new day. And that's an important thing. They even went further than that. And agreed that the four signatory unions have agreed that we're going to amicably resolve any grievance procedures or jurisdictional disputes. They've already told us that they're not going to file any grievances or arbitrations for as much as 6 months while we get through these, you know, sort of transitional times. That's extraordinary.
Is your door shut then to the Carpenters and to the Teamsters?
Is my door shut? No,
yes.
My door's always open to the Carpenters and the Teamsters, again, out of respect for their leadership. I mean, I will speak to them any time. It's not a unilateral decision. We now have a contract in place that's very important to understand. There are, you know, seven signatures to this contract, the four unions, the building, our labor supplier, and our management.
Test. This is a statewide required monthly test of the emergency alert system, originating from the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency, Harrisburg. This is only a test.
Year to begin to break even. How are you going to do that?
Well, at 30 conventions, we'll be doing much better than breaking even, for sure, just to be clear. You know, the potential is there. Going back, Marty, to the question you asked at the front end about, you know, how do we lure customers back? I don't think we have to in this sense. Philadelphia is a great city. They want to be in Philadelphia. We have heard that message loud and clear. They also want to be in Philadelphia with an ability to put on a good positive experience for all of their customers, members, and what have you. So the message to them now is, we heard you. We heard you in the industry, and we've done the things necessary to bring us up to par and in many cases surpass a lot of our peer facilities around the nation. So we have work rules and exhibitor rights in place now that make this place very competitive. And now I think we have a plan in place, and we're going to move aggressively to execute, to go out and talk to the customers who've turned their back on us or who have said they're not coming back, and let them know that we've made these changes. And Philadelphia is open for business, and we're excited to serve them.
And how many conferences, events are booked for this year at the convention center?
So the leaner years are the ones we're in right now. So 14, 15, 16, and you're quite correct that most of these larger shows book 3, 5, 7 years out. So, you know, we're looking now on the order of 9 to 12 shows for the next couple of years.
Wow.
We want to double that and hopefully do better. But it starts today, and this is a new day at the center.
Do you think there will be protests today at the center?
I have no indication. There have been none set up, to my knowledge, today. There was, there was a one-day, half-day protest the other day. I should say that and commend the unions who participated in that. You know, it was very civil, orderly, and we would expect that any future protests would have the same demeanor.
Well, John McNichol, thank you for joining us at AM Radio Times, getting our conversation started.
Thank you, Marty.
And he's the president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Convention Center Authority here in Philadelphia. We're going to take a very short break, and then we have two journalists waiting in the wings, standing by. They know this city very, very well, and we'll be talking about what has been happening at the convention center and what it means for Philadelphia. We want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Germantown Friends School, recognized for academic excellence and Quaker values for boys and girls grades kindergarten through 12. Hosting an open house on Friday, May 16th at 8:15 a.m. It's an opportunity to meet faculty and students, learn about art, drama, music, and athletic programs, visit classes in session, and tour the 7-acre historic campus, including the sustainable Wade Science Center. Germantown Friends School open house on Friday, May 16th at 8:15 a.m. GermantownFriends.org.
Before you hit the polls on primary day, tune in to WHYY's Election 2014, Friday at 11 a.m., hosted by WHYY's Dave Davies and featuring reports from across the state. WHYY's Election 2014 is a comprehensive look at the Pennsylvania congressional and gubernatorial races, focused on the issues that matter to you: taxes, education, fracking, and more. WHYY's Election 2014, Friday at 11 a.m.
I'm Robin Young. In a check-in with Michael Pollan, we'll find out, where are we in the battle for healthier food?
There's a sugar arms race in the supermarket where, you know, the yogurt now has to compete with the soda for which can deliver more sugar per ounce. And the yogurt's ahead right now.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Joining us now, Tom McDonald. I work with him. He's City Hall reporter for WHYY-FM and for Newsworks.org. And Tom, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Also with us, Tom Farrick, and he's founder, senior editor of Metropolis, editor of Access Philly, and a semi-regular guest on Radio Times, especially when we talk about Philadelphia and Pennsylvania politics. And Tom, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Glad to be here.
And Tom Farrick, let me begin with you. And is this a new day in Philadelphia based on what happened that has been happening at the convention center?
Well, it's a major change from the past practice, and it's a long time in coming. This has been a discussion about the convention center, this thing about work rules and hassles, since it opened in 1993, and it's accelerated. You may recall that last year that the convention center board tried to get this CSA with the unions. The carpenters went out on a strike August 1st. It was when a new show was about to come in. The board caved. They kicked the ball down, the can down the road. And this year, I think they finally had to address the issue. And I think John McNichol told you true. I mean, what really shifted their opinion was when the carpenters walked out again in the middle of talks, when a convention was inside, getting ready to take him down.
And Tom McDonald, here's a quote from John Daugherty, and it's actually in the Philadelphia Inquirer, but he says, everybody knows that for the past 10 years there has been only one problem at the convention center, and that's the carpenters. This is coming from John Daugherty, IBEW.
Well, what you have to look at is, when I did the story, I explained it, the two-foot ladder and electric screwdriver rule. And I know that a lot of people say this isn't the whole crux of the issue, but when you come in as a person who wants to set up a small booth, used to be 10 by 10, now it's larger, but you come in with something that you roll out, usually in a tube, and that's your backdrop for your booth. It's the picture of your booth, your company, whatever it is to go along. And these things are very small, very portable. Some can actually be carried on your shoulder as you go in. To be able to use something as small as a 2-foot step stool, which we all have in our homes, or an electric screwdriver, which we all have in our homes, can't be moved over to the jurisdiction of a union person. It's too simple a tool, and it's one thing the Carpenters Union was not going to give up.
And this is part of the agreement, though.
And this is now part of the agreement. The convention industry is a small industry. They all talk amongst themselves. If you start bringing people in who see that this is good and it's working, they will tell others. If it doesn't work, they will also tell others.
Well, and what we heard from John McNichol, Tom Farrick, I have to use first and last names
Sure.
here just so people know who's talking, is how the Philadelphia Convention Center has been losing out business. Now, they're blaming a lot of these work rules for the fact that they can't compete with other convention centers.
I think that's true. I think that's the reason they can't compete. The business has changed since the recession. The practice of unrestricted rights for the exhibitors has become more commonplace. The restricted rules that we had in Philly, less so. It's a national market. If you come here with a nurses organization or a firefighters organization and you have hassles, you can go elsewhere. In fact, they have gone elsewhere. The firefighters were here, had hassles. The nurses were here and had hassles. And they told the convention center, this is last year, we're not coming back. We were due to come back, but we're not coming back because of these labor hassles. Labor hassles has been part of the, you know, I'm putting quotes around it, has been part of the narrative for studies, reports, speeches, internal documents for the last 10 years. Labor hassles.
Tom McDonald, let me go back to you because you were there on Monday when there was a picket and members of the union, Johnny Daugherty, including one of the members that crossed a picket line. And as I said in my intro, that doesn't happen every day in Philadelphia.
It does not happen every day. The union solidarity is pretty strong. The problem that you look at with this is it kind of sets a little rift between the unions. It's not a guarantee that all the unions are going to respect each other's picket lines. Now, I'm not saying this is the first time a picket line has ever been crossed in Philadelphia. Lines have been crossed on many occasions by many different people. The message here is that there has to be a change. Everybody knows there has to be a change. If there isn't a change, you've got a $1 billion building that sits there fallow, and you've got 50,000 plus jobs in the hospitality industry that aren't supported.
Well, and I don't know if this is sort of dredging up old history, Tom Farrah, but whether there were questions about the expansion of the convention center, whether that made sense. Anyway, I know that these convention centers are highly competitive and are always trying to sort of outdo the next city.
Well, it made sense on paper in the sense that you have to remain competitive and you have to have a large center. But as part of that, they probably should have solved their labor issues that had been around for a long time. They had a 10-year customer service agreement, though, that they signed in 2003.
Right.
So that CSA, which presumably governed the behavior, wasn't going to expire. So they really didn't have the means, the lever, to make those changes. And the situation, I think, got worse. I think, too, that when Tom mentions the carpenters, you know, the labor movement in Philadelphia is united when it's usually against a common enemy. When they're not fighting them, they fight among themselves.
Mm. Very true.
And there are fights for jurisdiction. There are fights over – and the carpenters are ones that engage in a lot of fights. They have a reputation of being somewhat imperialistic when it comes to taking over other jobs and other crafts. They've been in court with people. They've had fist fights over things like that. And that's not the only one.
Right.
But I think that Ed Coryell Sr., who's the president of that union, had begun a process of alienating a lot of the other unions because of his obstinacy on this issue, for instance, and because of other issues. Chris Hepp reported in the Inquirer recently that the carpenters, who are the biggest union in the region, had stopped paying into the Building and Construction Trades Council, which is like the umbrella group headed by Pat Gillespie, stopped paying their dues. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a sign of a fight among them, and I think you're seeing the public manifestation of that disagreement with this action.
Plus, Coryell's gone underground. Yeah. I mean, I know I've personally been trying to get him for weeks to comment on this story. This story didn't happen overnight, and you call, you put the calls in. If you're right, why don't you want to speak your piece? Why don't you want to come out and explain what happened? If you're right, you talk. If you don't, a lot of times they go underground, and Ed Coryell is probably about three stories underground when it comes to talking to the media on this issue.
Meaning
he has no contact. You call his secretary. He got rid of one of his PR people and switched PR people. He used to use one of the PR people that everybody knows in Philadelphia for labor. He's now switched off to another person, and that person at first was talking to me about maybe talking this week, and then nothing. You know, it makes it hard from a journalistic point to tell the story when you only have one side. And the carpenters contend that they're right here. Okay, if you're right, show me why you're right. Tell me why, you know, everybody's telling us one thing and you're telling us the other thing.
Let me toss something to you, Tom Farrah, and then we do have Ryan Boyer, who's going to join our conversation. But I asked John McNichol whether he'd heard from Congressman Bob Brady,
right.
And I asked that because Brady often is in the middle of these negotiations. He's a union guy himself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you imagine that there are some behind-the-scenes phone calls, pressures, whatever going on?
I think that the line's been burning up both before this happened and right after this happened. And the problem is, as McNichol pointed out, they have a contract. They have a signed contract with these unions. They can't go out. And his argument is, we can't just open this contract up. He is saying, in so many words, that the carpenters and the Teamsters have lost their chance to work in that building.
Plus, under the agreement, all the other unions have to agree to reopen the deal.
Right.
And I don't think, Tom, I think you would agree with me at this point, they're not
deal.
All willing to reopen this.
Because it's more work for them.
It's more work for them, plus it's a solid deal. In this economy, in this day, with not a lot of shows coming up over the next 3 years, you've got guaranteed raises. Not everybody in this world has a guaranteed raise and a 10-year deal. There are very few 10-year union deals out there.
And that's the very familiar voice of Tom McDonald, City Hall reporter for WHYY-FM and for Newsworks.org. Tom Farrah, also with us as well, senior editor of Metropolis, editor of Access Philly. And we are talking about the deal worked out between the Pennsylvania Convention Center and four of the six unions that have worked at the center. And Philadelphia, a well-known union town. This is actually pretty big news. And we want to hear from you at 1-888- 877-977-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes at whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And joining us now is Ryan Boyer. He's business manager of the Labor's District Council of Philadelphia, one of the unions that did sign this deal. And Ryan Boyer, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty, for inviting me, and thank you, Tom and Tom, for your time.
You're very welcome.
I also serve as a board member for the Pennsylvania Convention Center Authority. So, I wear two hats and am intimately involved in this whole conversation around the customer satisfaction agreement that was signed.
And tell us why you and your union signed this agreement.
Well, we signed the agreement because we thought it was a good, solid deal. We thought that in this time of economic hardship and great competition that we have for shows and conventions, that we needed to have some change in our marketplace so that we can market Philadelphia, because once people come to Philadelphia, they always want to come back. So we had the black eye. We had some things that we needed to fix, and we thought the deal got to fixing those things. And let me go back, because we've heard a lot. I was there at every step of the way. We thought we reached a tentative deal on April the 30th at about 1:30 in the morning, so technically May 1. McNichol and McClintock could not sell that to the Customer Satisfaction Committee. So Sam Staten Jr., who actually is the negotiator for my local union, I'm the parent organization, he was in there on the sidebar saying, look, we want to meet with the customer satisfaction. We want to see what they want so we can try to make a deal. While in that room, the carpenters decided to put up a picket line. I think that was the line in the sand that each of the unions said that was not right. They were asking for a one-day extension to try to sell the deal, and they did that. And once they did that, all bets were off. Prior to that, we were all six unions standing together. They decided to make a unilateral strike at a time that we didn't believe the building could sustain that. And then when the deal came back, it was more draconian because we just lost a show that was $34 million of economic vitality to Philadelphia. It was a wrong-headed strike, and we think we're in the right position to move Philadelphia forward.
Is there bad blood between the unions that did sign and those two that didn't?
Prior to this, I had a great relationship with the carpenter. Ed Coryell and I had a good relationship. With the Teamster, not so much. I mean, so we never had good blood. But I don't anticipate it being bad blood. I think that Ed does a great job, a tough negotiator for the carpenters, and I think he kind of overreached. But for him to say that he didn't know there was a deadline is a fallacy. He's on the board. He was at an executive committee meeting in the board and a public meeting where it was quite explicitly stated, if you don't sign this deal. In fact, the deadline was over, and a board member actually said, if you sign it today, Eddie, we will accept it. He said, I cannot sign that deal.
Let me just jump in. If you don't mind, let me just jump in here. And I have to give Tom McDonald a shout-out here because he passed me a question or a comment. Would it be fair to say that your union gets more work because the carpenters won't be working at the convention center as it stands now?
No, I think that we took very little of the carpenters' work. I stated publicly in that meeting that I would not take any work that was traditionally done by the carpenter that was not done by the labor. But the customer satisfaction agreement 10 years ago when Mayor Street was the mayor, we lost some work to the carpenters to make the deal right because all five trades signed then. They had a public ceremony. Ed Coryell did not sign. So not to embarrass then Mayor Street, my business manager at the time, Sam Staten Sr., made some concessions. Now, those concessions we gained back, and we took all the Teamsters' operations on the dock, which makes it for a much more efficient convention center.
And final question to you, Ryan Boyer. Have you crossed picket lines before?
No. Listen, it may be in a rare occasion some members we didn't know about a picket line, but we are a proud union trade that rarely, if ever, crossed picket lines. This isn't about a picket line. This is about moving Philadelphia forward. We need that convention center because it's an economic engine that makes all the hospitality go. So if the convention center is dark or there's no clients there, you don't have hotel rooms, you don't have the chambermaids working, you don't have the hotel banquet facility, my members live, work, play, go to school in Philadelphia. We don't have a large union where people live outside of Philadelphia, South Jersey, or in the collar communities in Pennsylvania. 85% of my membership, including all of our leadership, live in Philadelphia. So we have a vested interest that this region grows.
Well, Ryan Boyer, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Business manager of the Laborers District Council of Philadelphia, Tom McDonald, and Tom Farrick staying with us for the rest of the hour. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Tom McDonald, I'd just be curious about, does that sound like the Ryan Boyer that you've interviewed and talked to before?
It's definitely the laborers have. I've talked more to Sam Staten than to this gentleman. It's one of those things that you look at. They need to work. The laborers are very key to that convention center, and when they don't have work, they need it.
How about for you, Tom? And I'm curious about, I mean, it seems that things seem to be going back to the Teamsters. Oh, no, excuse me, to the Carpenters.
Oh, well, it's been the Carpenters for a while. I mean, in my early reporting on this, someone said to me, who was very familiar with it, we don't have a union problem, we have a carpenter problem. Mm. And one of the reasons that the laborers are not going to be taking over carpenter jobs is because exhibitors are. They're going to be setting up their own booths. As Tommy says, they have kits, basically. They come in and assemble, and now they can do most of that work themselves. Right. So that's going to be a big deal for them. They want exhibitors. Let me just state that associations that come in here, their big moneymaker in the year, and the way they run their offices is their convention, because they rent out space to exhibitors who want to meet the 7,000 dentists that are here. And if they have a situation where they're not predictable in their costs, or they have hassles, or they get a bill that's, and this I've heard the story several times, they get a bill that they expected to be 20 and it was 50 because of overtime and because too many foremen were being used, and because that really hurts them. That hurts them with their board, and the board comes to them and said, wait a minute, we were supposed to make X out of this, and now we're not making that. So that was one of the problems, the predictability, and this one, even though they gave the union's pay increases, I think you'll see much more predictable bills.
And we're talking about, you know, pretty good hourly, very good hourly salaries, I would say, Tom McDonald. But it should be noted that these are not full-time jobs.
The salaries and benefits are very good, but they don't have 40 hours a week, and it is unpredictable work. Hopefully, they're saying that this new customer service agreement will bring in more shows, which will mean more hours for these groups. And as you look down the line, the Teamsters wouldn't have lost anything in either direction. They followed the Carpenters. I mean, you talked about, is this a Carpenters issue? It seems that way, because the Teamsters weren't going to lose any work anyway in this deal.
Well, we're going to take a very short break, and I'm looking at my computer. We have Bill Hamilton from the Teamsters who wants to join us after this very short break. So a lot of moving parts in this hour of Radio Times, talking with Tom McDonald, City Hall reporter for WHYY-FM and for Newsworks.org, and Tom Farrick. He is the editor of Metropolis and also editor of Access Philly. And we want to hear from you. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times, talking about the Pennsylvania Convention Center here in Philadelphia and the union involvement and the union contract. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows six enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
Next time on The Pulse, big changes and cuts have shaken up Big Pharma, disrupting the lives of thousands of people.
The announcement of site closure was a shock to everybody.
And I got the little blue folder slid over to me.
The entire scientific staff was tossed to the wind.
And I was devastated. You know, like, that was my life.
Displaced pharma workers, adjusting, searching, taking chances.
They created their own company.
Tomorrow morning at 9 on WHYY.
The crime of being a worker.
Congress starts to restrict this migration and make it illegal, creating this status of illegality for people who are doing the same thing that they've been doing for many generations.
how the idea of illegality clouds our ability to understand the immigration problem in America. Who is a criminal and who is an immigrant? Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. On Monday, John Dougherty, head of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 98, crossed a picket line for apparently the first time in his life. His union and three others signed an agreement with the Pennsylvania Convention Center on May 5th in Philadelphia. I should say that's where the convention center is. And two unions did not sign by that deadline. And we're talking about what this all means with Tom Farrick and Tom McDonald. And joining us now is William Bill Hamilton, and he's leader of the Teamsters Local 107, one of those unions that did not sign by that May 5th deadline. And Bill Hamilton, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. So why didn't your union sign by May 5th?
Because we had a May 10th deadline. When my agent and myself were at the extension agreement, when we both signed, the purpose of the extension agreement was to get us to May 10th without any further activities, and we were never formally notified. There was a phone call made when I was out actually in Las Vegas at our national convention, which I'm a vice president of the international also, and my response to them was, we have an extension until midnight on the 10th. I'll be back Friday. It will be signed. We've never had a problem with the extension agreement. One of the reporters was right. We don't have a community of interest with the carpenters. We don't even cross areas with customers. We strictly work in the loading docks and the unloading, and none of those rules affect us. There would be no reason why we wouldn't sign it.
Well, but four other unions did know about this deadline, and they did sign by that deadline.
Of course they did, because McNichol orchestrated it with Dougherty. That's how this thing came about. This didn't just happen. This was a meeting that was called between the four unions to divvy, and the reason they called the meeting was to divvy up the work for the other four unions. Now, what the working public doesn't understand, they will eventually, is that this dispute is going to be resolved by a much higher body than the Philadelphia Convention Center, because they didn't have a right to sign those agreements. They have international unions that have agreements signed, reciprocal agreements signed with labor unions across the country that are international unions, including the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. And Ryan Boyer can get on the phone and say, I'm not taking any of anybody else's work, but that's poppycock, because they have to take the work. They've taken our work. And they're going to take the carpenter's work. Who else is going to do it?
Well, let me jump in here just with a quote, and I think our two guests also want to ask you some questions. This is, again, quoting from John Dougherty. He says, about you, it was all about because Billy Hamilton knows he made a mistake. It shows his total lack of representation of his membership, that he's essentially blaming you and also saying you were in Las Vegas while all this was going on instead of in Philadelphia dealing with this agreement.
Well, then how would he know I was in Las Vegas unless they tried to reach me and I told them I was out of town, because I was at our annual convention and executive board meeting, and we had signed an extension agreement, which they, and incidentally, this is not the first extension agreement. It was the second extension agreement. Why wasn't there a secret meeting held during the first extension agreement to force feed this document down people's throats? All of a sudden, after the second agreement is signed, and we have until Saturday the 10th,
right.
And I returned it to the Inquirer, actually, to make sure it was properly documented on Friday the 9th. So it flies in the face of logic why the document doesn't have any effect on my membership or my work jurisdictions, and I signed it well before the expiration. Why would they care?
Well, Bill Hamilton,
Bill, are you saying
Tom
that
Farrick,
this is Tom Farrick,
say something.
Are you saying that this matter will be settled by a higher jurisdiction? Are you referring to the arbitration process? Have you guys sent this to arbitration yet?
The arbitration, the NLRB will resolve whether it's an unfair labor practice.
Okay.
The internal unions, you've already heard the statement from Steve Sweeney from the ironworkers saying that's not part of what they do.
Right.
You're going to hear from other labor unions across the country that have national agreements with the Teamsters.
Mm-hmm.
No rating packs. Don't take their work packs. they don't just get to come in and say, okay, we're going to do a deal with the convention center mm-hmm. and take the Teamsters' work. Mm-hmm. They don't have a right to do that.
Well, let me ask you, do you think, and this is another part of the agreement, which is a 3% increase over a 10-year period, is that a hard thing to turn down?
Well, that's an average wage increase in today's...
I don't think people are guaranteed a 10-year 3% raise every one of those years.
Well, could I explain?
You can.
The 3% also includes health and welfare and pension contributions. So when you take that 3% and break it down, it may come to a 0% increase when the benefits eat it up.
I'm curious, and we're going to have to say goodbye to you in a moment or two, unless either of our Toms here have more questions for you. Will the Teamsters, will you protest outside of the convention center? Are there plans to do that?
Well, there'll be plans to protest in timely fashions, but I'm hoping that this thing can be resolved well before that. Our intention is not to do damage to the Pennsylvania customers that are coming in. We understand that. But we also understand that we're not getting a fair play in the media because we did sign the agreement in a timely fashion, and we had no problem. And we told them from the very beginning we didn't have a problem with the customer satisfaction agreement. Mm. So why they would choose to cut us out of it demonstrates to me that there was already a plan in place.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you called into Radio Times, Bill Hamilton. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And he's leader of Teamsters Local 107, one of the two unions that did not apparently sign this customer agreement in time. Thank you. By May 5th. It takes several
according to
brains.
The convention center, right.
Yes, because yes.
But not Mr. Hamilton. I just
exactly. But I appreciate the call, and obviously this is a very important issue here in Philadelphia. We have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Tom McDonald, anything you want to say in response?
When you look at this, it's a matter of timing, but as Tom Ferrick knows, the National Labor Relations Board process will be something that won't be adjudicated overnight.
Right.
I mean,
these things take time.
This could take years.
Oh, it's could take.
Oh,
time.
As much as years.
Yeah. I mean, a complaint like this goes through the federal channels, and I mean, I've seen them take several years to come to the other end. In the meantime, you've got people who are becoming entrenched in jobs, and you know, you've got a whole thing. When somebody's there, are you going to change?
Yeah. We had someone, Tom Ferrick, who posted on our Facebook page about crossing picket lines, basically saying if John Dougherty is going to cross a picket line, is he going to bring out the Ratmobile when other people cross his picket lines?
Well, let's just be clear for a second. The picket lines that they crossed were not strike. They were not on strike, those unions. They were doing an, quote, informational line to protest the deal that was made. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's different from crossing a picket line when there is a strike versus an informational picket line. There isn't labor law, I know that much.
Let me get Leon from Norristown to join us on Radio Times. Leon, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Thank you. Well, one is, as a union member, I feel that Mr. Dougherty, and I assume some of his union members, who crossed even an informational picket line, are scabs.
Are scabs.
Scabs. This is a time when unions have to hang together. And to cross a picket line, and there is no difference between an informational picket and a striking picket, except from the point of view of the boss. And this is, as unions, we have to hang together. Now, I will say that I had the experience of a carpenter's union member cross an informational picket line that we set up here in the suburbs around a new Walmart. And the guy came over with his son and asked us who we represented, and one of the other people were the Teamsters, and said, were the carpenters involved? And I said, no. And he said to his son, see, this is what real unionism is. Mm. Then he went into the Walmart, bought a huge amount of stuff, and walked and put his stuff away, crossing our informational picket line, which, by the way, had the Ratmobile.
Had the Ratmobile there, just to add to the drama. Leon, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And, I mean, certainly, I guess, Tom Ferrick, if I can toss this to you, only because you've been on the show a number of times talking about unions, which is that has been, that solidarity has been part of the union history.
Well, and lore. And
lore.
And myth. I mean, you know, actually, it was interesting. We said they were hanging together. When they, last year, they stuck together, and the result was, I mean, like I said, this is a long time coming. These unions, the unions that signed, have been in favor of many of these work rule changes. They sort of get the connection between losing business and, you know, I mean, if you're supposed to have 25 conventions a year,
right,
and you have 12,
right,
you're getting half of what you could get. You're losing hours. You're losing work. And Ed Coryell felt that his members would lose money because they'd lose hours, and he was right, they would lose hours. But the argument was, you'll make up for it with more work. And he didn't buy into that argument.
Yeah. It's for the goal of the greater good that people are thinking about this. And I think the union movement in general is going to undergo a shift. They're going to have to understand a little more about what reality is and what the times are, and that you can't always have fully paid health care, fully paid medical, fully paid everything, and work rules that don't exist in regular society.
You know, this is rarely, I don't know if this has ever happened, but we have a guest who I talked to just about half an hour ago, wants to get back on the air. This is Ryan Boyer, and he's the business manager of the Laborers District Council of Philadelphia, wants to respond to what Bill Hamilton, leader of the Teamsters Local 107, just told us. So, Ryan Boyer, we're getting you back on the show. I'm going to give you a minute or two just for a quick response.
Okay, yeah, Bill Hamilton is a flat-out liar. His people were at every meeting that we were all invited to. He wasn't here, but his top steward at the convention center was here, and his representatives were here. There was no secret meeting. And for Bill to say he doesn't take anyone else's work, we had a drywall company that we delivered for 59 years called Kemp. His guys undercut our guys and raided our work, and I didn't want to bring that out. But for him to say that, he's just a flat-out liar, and he misrepresented his members because, as he said, the Teamsters got everything they wanted in that deal. They just were holding out because they were being led by the Carpenters, who was the only union that had an issue with that, as we all were behind the Carpenters until they put up the picket line that threatened to destroy an industry that we need desperately in Philadelphia.
Well, Ryan Boyer, thank you for calling back into Radio Times. Obviously, none of us were at those meetings, so it's important to have someone who was there to respond to Bill Hamilton.
But I know John Dougherty related a similar story to me, especially about the heads of the Teamsters being in Las Vegas for their convention and not on the scene when this was a critical time. And according to John Dougherty, it was a very critical time, and the Teamsters weren't there.
Tom Ferrick, we and I have said this, you know, this is a union town.
Yeah.
I mean, Philadelphia is a union town.
Yes.
You would agree with that,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So is this a big deal? Because it is a union town. And we've got unions that, at least now more publicly, are at each other's throats.
I thought that after last year, when the convention center kicked the can down the road, I thought that there wouldn't be any agreement, that the Carpenters would, quote, win. And I was wrong, because I think that they turned the screw themselves on themselves when they went out that day, May 1st, when they set up a picket line, when, as they've just told, they had an extension agreement. Well, why do you throw a picket line around the building when you have an extension agreement? And that, I mean, I guess if they're crying in their beer today, it's because that action which they took themselves, and I think the Teamsters have an even bigger regret, because they really had no problem with the agreement. They were just sticking with the Carpenters.
And the other part, if I can jump in here, is
sure.
that there's been a sea change at the convention center. It's not the old way. There's a new private management firm running at SMG. They have convention centers and sports arenas and other facilities all over the country. So they know what the common practice is in other areas. They also have contacts with these convention people and can say, look, we've adjusted the work rules to what they are in City X, City Y, City Z. Come back. We're going to make you a good deal. We need you in Philadelphia. And I think if this holds that's what you're going to see. You're going to see more conventions coming to town in these lull years. They're not going to be as big as what was booked because the big ones do book that's way right. in advance. But if you put two small conventions in the facility, there's room to do that because you've got the new building and the old building. You still have the same critical mass of people and the same amount of people working.
Tom, just because you cover City Hall, has this been playing out within City Council or from your reporting?
The mayor has weighed in on it. The mayor drove by the picket line the first day to get a check on it, and the police presence was massive. The picketers were outnumbered, definitely. And there was a perimeter set up around the building to make sure there was an orderly progression. So the mayor has said that this is what has to be done, and you can tell he is not siding with the carpenters on this, although he's not taking a side.
And we're almost out of time here, Tom Ferrick, but do you think the convention center will hold firm with the carpenters, for instance?
Well, there's a big question.
Yeah.
I think that what you just heard John McNichol say indicate that they're holding together and they're going to hold on this because they have this contract and they have to move forward. And the further you get away from this, the more it's going to show, as Tommy said, that they're going to be getting the business. They can't go back now to their customers and say, oh, we were going to change our work rules. It was going to be a new day. But on second thought, we probably can't deliver on that. And the customers know this kind of stuff. They read the paper. They see it in the trade presses. They know whether it's real or not. So they're really have drawn the line here, and I think they'll hold.
Well, we have to end our hour. My apologies to Mike Barnes. He was waiting in the wings from the stagehands, wanted to join our conversation as well. Happy to have the two of you. Tom Ferrick, as always, thanks for joining us on Radio Times. Tom McDonald, thank you very much as
thank
well.
You.
Tom McDonald, City Hall reporter for WHYY-FM and for Newsworks.org, and Tom Ferrick, founder, senior editor of Metropolis, and editor of Access Philly. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoe, and thank you so much for joining us in this first hour Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.